Welcome to episode number 5 of the Three Man Weave Sports Podcast. I'm your host, Jack. This week we'll be covering the last few weeks and our reactions from the NFL and the NBA offseason as well. We'll be back right after this. It's the Three Man Weave.
If young Metro don't trust you, I'm gonna shoot you. Beautiful morning, get the sun in my morning, babe. Nothing in the water.
Welcome back to episode number 5. We've already made it to 5. I'm here with Mason and Devin. How are you guys doing this week?
I'm doing great. Glad to be back for 5 episodes. Thank you guys so much for the support on our first 5, and we hope to have so many more. How are you guys doing today?
I'm doing good right now.
You know, we had Wednesday football yesterday, first of all, which was just crazy. You know, we love a nice Wednesday afternoon football game. It was enjoyable. You know, got to see two kind of slowed offenses playing each other, but you know, we'll take it. It was nice to have that. I wish we'd have Thursday football today, but you know, wish we could. Sometimes, you know, the COVID season, it does what it does.
Wish we could do a lot of things in this COVID season.
Yeah, exactly. One of the first things I just want to ask you guys about is Chiefs obviously had a fantastic game. Tyreek Hill went off, 13 catches, 269 yards, 3 touchdowns. Incredible game. He kind of led the line for them. Do we think, even watching the Steelers play yesterday, you know, still being undefeated, are the Chiefs still the team to beat in the league?
I'm not really sure, and I mean, I root for the team, let's be real. Our defense has regressed from last year. Our run defense has gotten way worse. I mean, if the Buccaneers would have stuck to the ground game instead of trying to throw so many times, then I feel like we would have been in a bigger hole. Obviously, we still have weapons. Like, I mean, Tyreek Hill, I would have thought that most people in the league last year would have figured out that if you need to double team him and have somebody over the top. The Buccaneers chose to play Carlton Davis on him one-on-one, which Carlton Davis is a great corner, but he just doesn't have the speed to keep up. And if you leave Tyreek Hill one-on-one isolation, then Mahomes is going to find him.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it looks so easy when the Chiefs play. I mean, like, they're out there, they're winning games, now they're 10-1. And I know they don't play the Steelers. It'll probably be an AFC Championship game if they do end up playing. But I think they're by far the best team still in the league. And I know they had that one bad week against the Raiders, but it looks so easy when they're out there. They didn't even have a run game this week, really. You know, Edwards-Helaire only had 37 rushing yards, great. And they're still just dominating teams. I mean, they jumped out early. The only concern to me is closing out games. They haven't looked fantastic.
No.
They score early, and then they kind of get a little lackluster. I mean, Devin, what do you think about the Chiefs?
I think they're a really good team, but as of right now, I'd still think that the Steelers are still the team to beat. Like, they're still the only undefeated team. So I think someone would like to knock them off before the Chiefs.
Yeah, I don't want to discount or like overrate the Steelers, but they're an undefeated team and they're finding ways to win. And we really shouldn't disrespect a team that's 11-0 right now, no matter who they've beaten and how they've beaten them.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only concern, though, is, I guess, moving on to the Steelers, is just how they've been so shaky. And I mean, we saw it again, you know, yesterday against the Ravens. Obviously, they're playing backup quarterback, ended up being third string McSorley out there at the end of the game. And, you know, they were forcing turnovers, yet they just couldn't get the score. They weren't able to really finish off those drives. And you know, Mason, what do you think about their offense? Do you think they're really going to be able to sharpen it up before come playoff time?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's an interesting offense to watch because they don't really like to run the ball a lot. It's a lot of incredibly quick passes. Big Ben's like the least sacked quarterback in the league by a pretty wide margin. But I feel like sometimes they're just throwing first read way too quickly. They're getting like 1-2 yard completions on first down, and it's just leaving you with long second and third downs to go, which they don't usually end up converting. And then when they get into the red zone, I mean, Big Ben's a phenomenal quarterback, but he made a really questionable decision on fourth down yesterday just to lob that ball into a triple coverage. It got intercepted, obviously. I think they just need to clean up some of their mistakes. Even Mike Tomlin said after the game yesterday that they were playing like a JV team and they still won.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the Steelers look shaky. I guess one of the other teams is the Ravens. I mean, they were down so many players. I think everyone seemed to be a little upset with the Ravens just because of how they've handled this situation and, you know, forced a bunch of schedule changes. But do we think, Devin, do you think the Ravens are going to make the playoffs now? I mean, looking at the AFC playoff picture, you know, Cleveland's there at the 5, Miami's 6, and then Indianapolis is in at the 7, and then Vegas and Baltimore are 8 and 9 at 6 and 5. Do we think this might be it for the Ravens and their playoff hopes? Or do you think they can turn it around and still make a chance to get in the wild card?
Oh, I think they can have a chance to turn it around. I feel like their only big game is really Week 14 against the Browns Monday night, and the rest of their schedule is really easy. So
yeah,
they should
be
a win.
Yeah, I mean, they play Cowboys, then Browns, but then Jags, Giants, Bengals. that should be 3-0 to end the year off. So they really got to take care of business against the Browns there. That'll basically make or break their season, given how the Browns are in the wild card right now, too. I mean, how do you guys feel about the AFC playoff picture right now? Do you think it's going to change at all, or do we think Cleveland, Miami, and Indianapolis are the three teams that are going to make it in? Mason, what do you think?
I think there could be pretty big changes because, like you said, the Ravens have a pretty easy schedule. If they get past the Browns, they could very well be 11-5 when the season ends. Indianapolis and Tennessee could flip-flop because they're so close in the division. If Tennessee drops a game and Indianapolis picks up a few, could be interesting. Buffalo, I think they're going to hold firm in that four spot. And then I think Cleveland's probably going to hold their wild card. Miami has a really tough schedule coming up, though. They go to the Bengals this week. That should be a win. But then they have Chiefs, Patriots, Raiders, Bills. I'm not really sure if they're going to be able to hold on.
That'd be tough. I don't even know if they'll win any of those games.
Right. They could win one or two of them, but I'm not feeling confident. And even the Patriots, they're 5-6, but they could jump Baltimore if Baltimore finds a way to lose to Dallas this week. Never count them out.
I mean, one of the other things to look at, too, is who do we think is going to win the AFC South? Because if you would have asked me probably last week, I would have said the Colts. They looked a lot better than the Titans when they played in that Thursday night game, albeit the Titans had a really rough special teams and kind of, you know, had a blocked punt, shanked punt, you know, a lot of things were going against them. But then, you know, they come out this week and kind of handle the Colts. They won by 19. I mean, do we think now we've reversed, or do we still think the Colts are better than the Titans?
For me, I think right now it's the Titans, but it's really going to come down to this game against the Browns this Sunday for Tennessee. If they can beat that, they have one game left in their schedule that I think they have a shot at actually losing, which would be the Packers, week 16. Other than that, they put the Jags, the Lions, and the Texans, all very winnable games. So if they beat the Browns, I think they have a real shot at going.
Yeah. Well, like, one thing stands out with the Titans, and that's obviously, I mean, they have Derrick Henry, who is an absolute animal. He's one of the only running backs in the league they can really build a team around. Right. I mean, and you got to look at it, like, with the way the league's changing, so much passing, like, how successful can you be building a team around a running back? Mason, how do you feel about this? Because I know you've always had opinions about really, you know, either drafting your running back high or paying a running back a lot of money. I mean, Derek might be one of the few outliers. He's probably one of the most freak, rare players we've seen in the league history.
Right. You don't pay a running back or spend a high pick on them unless they're a freak of nature with all this. Because every running back today, I feel like, in college football is talented and could play on Sundays no matter what division they're playing at. It just depends on the intangibles they have and how you fit their scheme. Like, the Jacksonville Jaguars this offseason were able to let go of the former fourth overall pick in Leonard Fournette and bring in an undrafted free agent from Illinois State named James Robinson to fill in. And he's looked way better than Leonard Fournette did last season. He's averaging more yards per carry. He looks more explosive. He's better catching the football. And, I mean, Leonard Fournette's found a home in Tampa Bay, but he's on a short contract.
Yeah, both, I mean, you see it every year, too, with the undrafted free agents. I mean, we've seen it with, what, Eckler? Undrafted,
Austin Eckler, right? Yeah.
I mean, Philip Lindsay was undrafted, too, a few years ago, and he had a great year.
2,000-yard seasons, yeah. He looks better than Gordon in Denver this year.
You see it where it's tough because you want to spend those picks on those great backs. I mean, the Saquon Barkleys and, you know, Ezekiel Elliott, some players like that. But when you end up paying them the money, it locks up your team.
Durability is such a concern.
Exactly, and it's hard to do that. So, like, you know, it's really hard looking at these teams where you can be like, let's replicate what Tennessee's doing. We're going to build around a running back, and we're going to win games just grinding the clock out. But when you really look into it, it's so rare that it actually happens and successful. I mean, it's really tough.
And
to
it's
replicate.
Really that, I mean, Derrick Henry's the only back that's been able to stay consistently healthy all these years.
Well, and it has to do with just how big he is.
Oh, yeah,
I mean,
yeah. He can tank hits very easily.
It's mainly
easily,
just because of how he's a freak. I mean, most running backs wouldn't be able to handle that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's always interesting to me. And then I guess one of the other things to look at from last week, other than the Titans game, is, to me, I thought the Vegas game was the biggest just question mark of the week. You know, it's funny, Brandon's dad, Joel, texted me this week asking who my lock of the week was for betting, and I said Vegas. I thought Atlanta, not very good. Vegas, 3.5-point favorite. I was like, all right, like, I'd bet that. That is no problem with me. Go out and lose 43-6. They lost by 37 points. I mean, what's going on with this Raiders team? If you would have asked us, like I said, 2 weeks ago, I think we'd probably have them in the playoffs. How are you guys feeling about them now? I mean, that's concerning, getting blown out by a team like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Raiders and the Falcons have had habits of doing this exact thing over the past few years. The Falcons starting off incredibly poor, finishing really good, screwing themselves out of a good draft pick. The Raiders have started exactly like last year, 6-4. They were in position to make a wild card run. They flamed out, I believe, finished 7-9. And didn't make the playoffs. So it's just really, it's kind of a repeating trend. The Raiders have a pretty favorable schedule, I'd say, coming up. They have three more winnable games in the Jets, Chargers, and Broncos, but they'd have to get over the hump of the Colts and the Dolphins to get to the playoffs. I mean,
both of those teams, though, are, you know, we've also question marks about.
Exactly.
Yeah, the Colts could lose.
It's a bunch of questionable matchups.
You know, the whole AFC, it seems, other than, I think we're all really high, obviously, on Steelers and Chiefs. I'd take them over any of the other NFC teams. But then, I mean, you get down the line, and it's really shaky. It's a whole big grouping of who knows what out there, and I think anyone can beat anyone. So it'll be really interesting to see how this playoff shapes up. I mean, kind of talking about, you know, teams that might be able to make it in, let's talk a little bit about the Patriots, who, you know, I think most people in the league would have written off. You know, they were 4-6 going into a game against the Cardinals. I think most people would have thought they'd be 4-7 after that game. A lot of us were pretty high on the Cardinals. And the Pats managed to go out, and, you know, it was a close one, but they pulled off the win. And, I mean, how do we feel about this? Being able to beat the Cardinals 20-17, I mean, Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins weren't really connecting, and despite Cam not really being able to throw the ball, they were able to go get win. I mean, how'd you guys feel about that game?
I thought it was a really great job between a two-week stretch of adjustments by Bill Belichick and that defense. They let Deshaun Watson 2 weeks ago throw for 344 yards on him and run for a touchdown. And just a week later, they faced a quarterback with a much similar play style in Kyler Murray, and he was limited to 170 yards, threw a pick, didn't get anything going on the ground. The defense they played to stop Kyler Murray was really interesting as well. They only rushed two people, had two spies, and then had two guys play contain on the outside, get your hands up immediately, and that's how you stop a quarterback like Murray,
yeah,
who's
I
only
mean,
5'10".
It's such a weird fluke game to even look at, because I want to be like, that's a great win for the Patriots, but they put up 179 yards of total offense.
That's how they're going to win games.
Yeah,
it's going to be their defense,
concerning,
and it's going to be a clock-controlling run game.
Yeah, but it's an odd game to look at where you're like, wow, the Patriots had a good win, and then, you know, how do they go out and win that game when Cam didn't play well? I mean, they didn't even rush the ball very
Cam
well.
Cam hasn't played well a lot this year. This team has to win ugly games. I don't know how to say that, but
I guess,
they have to win ugly
this
year.
Yeah, I would say, well, I guess with the main question then would be, with 5 weeks left, are they going to be able to win enough of these ugly games? Or I mean, I would think no. With five, I mean, they're 5-6. You're going to probably
their schedule's rough.
Yeah, you'd have to get about 9-10 wins to make it.
They have two games that I could see them winning pretty handily. The Chargers could give them a test this week. I see them winning that. Then the Jets the last week, obviously I see that. But in between, the Rams, Dolphins, and Bills are all going to give them a big run for their money. I don't really see them taking any of those games. But they could pull out one like the Cardinals this week, as long as they slow down the other team's offense.
Yeah, I mean, just one thing with like the Patriots, it's like, I mean, just looking at how they've been playing, it seems like these guys that we never even heard of are the guys really coming up and making plays for some, you know. It was Jacoby Myers, I mean, was their leading receiver this weekend. I mean, he only had 5 catches, 55 yards, but you know, it's some of those things where the Patriots, for so long, they were obviously awesome, you know, 6 rings. They really only did that because they were able to draft so well, and we've always known Belichick being a great drafter. You look at the last 5 years, I mean, they basically have missed almost on every draft pick. I mean, looking at it right now, they've had their last 2 first-round picks, N'Keal Harry and Sony Michel. I mean, it's a toss-up. Which one's worse? They're both horrible.
I had a huge problem with Sony Michel, and they took him in the first round, and now that he was good his rookie year. He led him to a Super Bowl, but now that he's been injury prone, they have a 3rd-round pick in Damian Harris taking all his carries away now that he's back off IR. Damian Harris looks better than Michelle did when he went on to IR. And N'Keal Harry, he was supposed to be this big jump ball kind of guy the Patriots had been missing for so long, but really he just has failed to create separation. His hands have not been great since he went into
the
league, and he's been injury prone too.
I mean, yeah, like you said, 2019, I mean, 3rd-round pick for Damian Harris. I mean, he's ended up being the way better of the backs.
Yeah,
you look at the Patriots, I think that, you know, people wondering how they declined. Obviously, losing Brady is tough, but you got to hit on those picks, and that's twice in a row that they have just absolutely struck out. It's not only, you know, missed on a better guy, but they're basically getting no production out of either of those guys, and that's really rough when you're trying to go win games. I mean, speaking also of that, you know, Patriots game, on the other side of the ball, we have Kingsbury, who's the head coach in Arizona, and I mean, I know we all liked Arizona, but to me, when Kingsbury was hired, I was a little bit confused. You know, he got fired from his job in college and then getting hired as a OC. He was going to go be an OC at USC, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and then he gets head coach at Arizona, and I might be wrong saying this. I think he really hinders the Arizona Cardinals. I mean, I don't think he's a good coach. I think he holds them back from being a good team. I mean, what do you think, Mason? Some of his decision making to me has just been, you know, question mark, you know, to say the nicest way.
I think the clock management has been nothing short of awful these past few weeks, especially in that Patriots game. I don't understand the decision to just give it hand off straight up the middle to Kenyon Drake on 4th and goal. He got bailed out multiple times by holding calls on the Patriots in the end zone that gave him a fresh set of downs. Really, I mean, I think Kingsbury needs to, you know, keep his style of offense intact, but I think he needs to hand over the play calling to somebody else, because there's been too many times this year where I've watched the Cardinals and thought, what the hell are they doing?
Yeah, I mean, well, the problem, too, is, like, it's not even with play calling. It's just the managing of the game as well. I mean, when you out-rush and out-throw a team, I mean, they out-threw them by almost 100 yards. They had more, you know, yards per play. They even forced more turnovers than the Patriots did, and you're not able to go...
because of red zone play calling.
Yeah, and you're not able to go win a game. I mean... That's bad game management, and as much as we like Cliff Kingsbury and this Cardinals team, they're so young, I think he has potential to be a good coach, but he has been, I think, the biggest weakness for the Cardinals this year is actually the coach.
He's a player coach. It's just, I think he needs to give up play calling duties.
Right.
Yeah.
Seems like a lot of people in the league need to do that. I mean, like, some of the things to look at is, like, a lot of people forget last year. I mean, Andy Reid gave up play calling. He's a huge, like, prestigious coach. Everyone knows, you know, and he swallowed his pride, gave up play calling. They went and won the Super Bowl.
If you have a talented play caller waiting in the wings, you need to let them shine. You didn't hire them just to sit there and give you advice. They need to be calling plays. I don't know if Arizona has a offensive coordinator or a QB coach that has a bright young mind like that, but they need to find somebody, because Cliff needs to focus on clock management and managing his players, not calling plays.
I mean, hopefully the Cardinals can you know, fix that pretty quickly, just because, you know, they're starting to, I mean, the NFC is not as competitive as the AFC this year, at least come playoff picture, but I mean, they're starting to drop out of it. They're the 7th seed right now, but I mean, it's close, and they're going to want to, I mean, I don't think the Vikings are going to be able to catch them, but the Niners could catch them. I mean, the Niners, we'll talk about them in a few minutes, but they're looking dangerous. I mean, speaking of bad coaches, I want to go to one of these games. I think you guys might know who I'm ready to talk about.
Doug?
Anthony Lynn.
Oh.
I mean,
I would go for Doug Peterson. Yeah.
Doug Peterson.
That's
come
what
up
I was
a few.
Thinking.
All
too.
Right, let's go for Anthony Lynn.
I mean, Anthony Lynn, like, how bad can you be as a coach? I mean, I'm pretty sure I saw he's 5-17 in his last 22 games as a head coach, or 5-18 in his last 23. And if I'm going to be honest, I think they could have won probably about 16 of those games. I mean,
they're always in one score game. It's crazy. Yeah. I saw, like, the teams that haven't lost a game by more than 8 points this season. I think it was the Chargers and then the Steelers, because obviously they're undefeated.
And they're 3-8, though.
Right, like, yeah.
They just can't seem to
win
these games.
When your game is that close down the stretch, it all comes down to play calling and time management. And Anthony Lynn is just not good at managing the clock. I mean, there's been repeated times where they're choosing between going for it and kicking a field goal on fourth down. They can't choose it quick enough. They can't get a play in quick enough. And he ends up having to burn a timeout just to talk about it and go out and do the opposite.
Yeah, I mean, let's just, I mean, the last minute of that game, I mean, we don't have to be humble about this. I mean, it was horrible. Clock management, that was...
I don't think I've ever seen a quarterback sneak called on a play where the offensive line starts to pass block when they take the snap. Like,
yeah,
that has to be the dumbest
and,
thing
I mean,
I've ever seen.
I just don't understand. Like, you hurry up, you get, like, you're down 10, so you need to score quickly. And, you know, they great play call. Throw it down the field, get a score, hopefully. They chuck it all the way down the field. I think it was to Keenan Allen. Comes down with it. And then you think everyone on the field knows what's going on. You spike the ball, and then you get to the line, probably go 5 wide and throw the ball. And not only do they come to the line and sneak it, then they come to the line again and try to run it again.
Yeah,
I mean,
the
game's over at that point. You have no timeouts. I mean, and it came, they already wasted a timeout way earlier in the drive. When
right,
they
I don't know what
to.
You're doing. Yeah, let your young, talented quarterback throw it into the end zone. They have such a talented roster that's being hindered so badly by play calling and coaching decisions. It's painful to watch every week. I feel bad for Chargers fans, because your team should be way better, and it is way better than your record says.
Yeah, I mean, I just feel bad for the Chargers, because they're such, like, they're a fun team to watch play, and then there's Anthony Lynn there, and he's
much talent. Anthony Lynn is just wasting it year after year.
I mean, maybe we could start. Definitely, people have already started it, but the three-man weave definitely approves of firing Anthony Lynn. We need him out of Los Angeles.
Oh yeah, we need a more competitive AFC West.
I mean, I guess if we're just gonna go on bad coaching, might as well throw it over. Mason, Doug Peterson, go away. Say what you need to say about it.
Okay, so Doug Peterson, my main issue is his play calling. I mean, 2017 Super Bowl, Doug Peterson wasn't calling play. Doug Peterson is just like Anthony Lynn and Cliff Kingsbury. He's a good players coach. He's good at managing the game, or he was before he took over play calling duties. He let Jim Schwartz do his thing. He let John DeFilippo do his thing. They had
Frank Reich
was
awesome.
A great offensive coordinator, QB coach. But after all of them left, you know, DeFilippo went to Minnesota, Reich went to the Colts. After Peterson took over play calling duties, he really hasn't played to his team's strengths. They have an electric running back in Miles Sanders that barely gets 15 touches a game. He averages over 6 yards a carry. I don't know why you wouldn't feed somebody like him. And then obviously Carson Wentz has been terrible this season, to say the least.
And the offensive line's been really bad.
Yeah, but Doug is doing him no favor. When you have a beat-up offensive line and a quarterback who panics under pressure, you don't have him sit back there and max protect play action with two receivers.
He's been sacked the most times than any quarterback this year, and it's mainly to do with because Doug still likes to think. I mean, don't get me wrong, the Eagles, when healthy, have a fantastic O-line, and Doug likes to still think they have that, and he calls the game exactly the same as he would with it, and it's simply just not how
it should be. You have to play to their strengths. Like Carson Wentz, what I want to see more of out of Philadelphia, I want to see more getting Carson Wentz out of the pocket on design rollouts and let him either scramble or use that arm of his and throw it down the field.
Exactly.
That's
where
he is best.
I think what people seem to forget, too, is in 2017, 2018, his two best years, that's what he did. He was moving a lot. It was a lot of running. I mean, we all remember that play on Sunday Night Football, I think, at Seattle, where he, you know, he was getting hit, I think it was by KJ Wright, and is able to throw the ball 50 yards
downfield.
He's not
a pocket passer.
I mean, and not especially when there's not even a pocket to pass out of. And I mean, I guess the other problem to me, I think, with Philadelphia is, you know, there's been a lot of tension in the front office. It sounds like, you know, the coaching staff maybe necessarily didn't want to take Jalen Hurts, but the, you know, the owner, you know, Lurie, and maybe the GM Roseman were wanting to get another quarterback in there. And then to me, at least, if you're going to take a quarterback like that who isn't necessarily a conventional quarterback, you need to use him in the right way. And the problem that I see, at least just as a fan watching the game, is they throw him out there in such stagnant situation where it's like you can't allow either quarterback really to get the rhythm then, because if it, you know, like second, it's like second and 10. They're like, all right, Jalen, get on out there for one play, and then they pull him out. It doesn't even seem like they have a game plan
for
him.
If you're going to put him in, use him for a drive.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter what he does.
At least scheme
it
into it where it's like you have him out there consistently for maybe a few plays in a row, where right now is how it is. He played two snaps and stuff, and we heard all week about Jalen Hurts.
These two quarterback formations let the defense just crowd the line of scrimmage because, A, they know a run's coming. B, no one has to defend Carson Wentz on a pass play. It really, I mean, it just condenses what you can do on offense so much. They need to throw one guy out there, let him have a drive. If he doesn't work, throw the other guy in.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, for someone that, for Doug, who's supposed to be such like a creative play caller and like such a creative, you know, name, like offensive coach, he's done a horrible job at least integrating Hurts into the offense, because like it's just like you throw him out there for one play and take him out. I mean, you're not going to get anything out of that, and it's not really going to make the team better, and it probably doesn't help Wentz's rhythm either. And
he's doing a terrible job of using the receivers he has, too. Jalen Reagor, for you guys, has had almost no production. I don't put that on Jalen Reagor because, A, he's gotten injured, B, Doug doesn't use him right. I'm sick of seeing the jet sweeps, the screens underneath. Jalen Reagor was able to go up and get the ball jump ball-wise at TCU. They need to let him just be himself, go deep.
Yeah, I mean, we all watched the draft together, and that was the one thing that, while I was very upset when we drafted Jalen Reagor, that was the thing. I was like, all right, he looks a lot faster on the field than he actually ran at the combine, and that he could go deep. That was what I thought he was going to be.
Right.
And he shows up here.
You
and
can't
we just
draft four receivers and strike out in every single one, because that's what the Eagles have done so far this year. Every single one of the receivers they drafted last year has been a bust.
It's been a bad year. And I guess let's think, I mean, I guess before we move off the Eagles, I guess we got to do it real. I mean, do you think they should stay with Carson Wentz, or do you think, as some people are saying, they should move on to Jalen Hurts?
I have no clue, because both sides of this debate bring up really good points. I think Carson Wentz is a talented quarterback. I mean, yeah, we've all, you know,
he's been disappointing this
year. We've given him, we've given him crap this year. He's been terrible.
He's been bad.
I don't think they're playing him to his strengths right now, though, and I want to see what he's like when they're using play calls that maximize his strengths, when he has a fully healthy offensive line. I want to see what he does then. I think they need to stick with it one more year. And going back to Jeffrey Lurie, the owner, not only is there a GM problem, head coach problem, I'm having issues with him, because I've seen so many reports about him being unhappy, about Doug Peterson's job security being, he's on the hot seat. But then I get two reports yesterday that the Eagles are going to keep Howie Roseman, Doug Peterson's going to keep his job next year. You need to make up your mind. If you're not happy with the current staff, get them out of there and rebuild.
Yeah, I mean, we can't have a Jerry owner in there. And then I just, for me, I think this is the only other big thing to point out is a lot of people seem to think that you put Jalen Hurts in there, the offense is all of a sudden magically going to change. It's still going to be the same offense.
No, it's still
going to
be
no
bad. They just
want to
see
no
what they
O-line.
Have. I think
I
they should see what they have.
And that's why, I mean, I think you guys know this. I mean, you talk to me every day. And that's why I wanted to see some Jalen Hurts, at least some. I mean, I didn't say I wanted him to start some Monday night, but I wanted to see him out there for at least a drive or two, because I agree. I'm like,
but it was,
you know,
just like two plays on two separate drives.
It looks like they didn't even have a game plan for him, and that's disappointing. But, I mean, I guess that's enough to talk about it, the Eagles. We don't need to go on forever about them. They're not a good team. Like, we'll just say that.
We could go on forever about a lot of these bad organizations, because it's not the team. It's usually like the interior.
Like the front office.
The front office has been abysmal.
I mean, let's. I guess we'll just go a little bit more productive. We'll talk about the division, the NFC East. I mean, the Giants went out, got the win. They're now first place in the NFC East. Do we think it's going to be the Giants? I mean, they beat the Bengals by two. Backup quarterback, no Joe Mixon. I mean, How do you feel about that win? Probably not great, but, you know, win's a win. They won three straight games. And then I guess the other positive would be Washington, who on Thanksgiving Day went out and killed the Cowboys. Who do we think is going to kind of take charge of the NFC East and get that fourth seed playoff, which who knows what happens at that point? I mean, one thing to look at is there's two teams in NFL history that have made the playoffs with a losing record. Both of them won a game in the playoffs.
Well, I like both of these teams. Both of them have really underrated defenses, especially the Giants. I feel like we don't talk about the Giants' defense enough and the job that Joe Judge has done in his first year there. They are so much more competitive first year than they were with Pat Shurmur last year. It's incredible to watch. Daniel Jones, I mean, I don't know what to think of Daniel Jones at this point. He lost his, you know, incredible running back in Saquon Barkley. He has weapons out there, though, right? I mean, you have Evan Ingram, who's kind of turned into a little bit of a bust. He had a really nice day against the Bengals. We'll give him that. They have Darius Slayton, Sterling Shepard.
I think Evan Ingram, when used properly,
is good. Right. Just Jason Garrett is their offensive coordinator. Was a questionable hire at the time, and I think that's the one thing that Joe Judge hasn't exactly done right.
I mean, and then they're running the ball well. I mean,
Wayne Gallman.
Devin could talk about it all day.
Devontae Freeman, when healthy. Their offensive line has played better over the past few weeks. And
Right now, who would you guys give the edge to? The Washington or the
only Giants? New York, because Washington's schedule is really tough down the stretch.
Right.
I like Washington a lot more than the Giants as a team.
And I think the quarterback issue, too, in Washington as well. Where
I would agree with that.
They're on the third quarterback of the year.
Alex Smith at age 35 isn't going to win you any games.
Yeah, and then, I mean, just one interesting thing to look at, which, you know, just could be kind of fun, is as of, you know, it could shape up right now to be Giants as the 4 seed in the playoffs, Bucks as the 5 seed. Think of the Giants fans going up against Tom Brady in the playoffs. You know they love that storyline. I mean, I'd love to see that. It'd be an exciting matchup.
We've already seen it once this year.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, the Giants love beating Tom Brady, so it'd just be an interesting thing to look at. I mean, I guess, so the last thing now to kind of look at from this week, I would just say as a takeaway, is the Niners, a team who we kind of probably counted out.
Oh,
I would say.
I had written them off already.
I think we all had written them off. I mean, all of a sudden they go out and beat the Rams, who, you know, the NFC West, for looking like it was probably the best division in football, is now
who knows what's looking.
It's a big cluster. And I mean, the Niners now kind of have a shot to go out and make the playoffs still. Do we think they could even make a run at it? I mean, they have a big game this week against the Bills, but they get to play Washington, Dallas, and then they get to play Arizona and Seattle still. They can make up ground. I mean, that's a tough schedule, but do we think the Niners could do it? And I think another thing to look at, too, is if the Niners do that, Kyle Shanahan could be a Coach of the Year candidate.
Kyle Shanahan has to be a Coach of the Year candidate if they're somehow able to make the playoffs
with all the injuries
they've had on that
roster.
They
seem to have 10 to 15 guys on IR every week.
Yeah,
it's
crazy.
It's incredible.
Yeah, they're playing with pretty much a backup defense. They have, you know, shell of what their offensive line was last year. They're getting their running backs back healthy this last week. Really helped them in the Rams game, but their defense stepped up in a huge way. And I mean, they've had the Rams number for like the past four games. I'm pretty sure they're 4-0 in the last 2 years against them.
Yeah, I mean, totally. I would agree. I mean, I think the Niners are a team to look at out of the three teams that are in the 5 and 6 range. So the Vikings, Bears, who we said were horrible at the time.
Bears,
they're bad.
Yeah, they're awful.
They're bad. They weren't real when they had 5 wins. And then the Niners. I mean, I think out of those three, I would probably say the Niners at least have the best chance to make a run at it.
I agree.
The good thing is there's a 6-5 team right now in the 7 spot. I mean, so they could realistically just hop one game.
They could hop the Cardinals because they still have to play them.
Exactly. Yeah. So it'll be something to look at. And then I guess, you know, to end off our football talk here, I normally ask you guys everywhere, at least most times I ask you, do we think, are the Saints still the best team in the NFC? How do we look at the, I mean, they played last week, they dominated the Broncos, but we don't even need to go into that game. It was a horrible game. No, shouldn't have been played. I mean, the league is just...
It's a mess with games that they know aren't going to be important to most people.
Right. How much do we look into that game? I mean, like I said, they played well. Taysom Hill obviously is getting the job done, but is New Orleans still the best team in the league when Drew Brees comes back? Not in the league, but in the NFC.
Outside of that, you know, weird Broncos game, they're still the best team in the NFC just because of the consistency they show on both sides of the ball. They have great receivers. They obviously have a great their defense is what I like to look at the most. They have an elite pass rush. They have great coverage corners. They have a really good secondary, good linebackers. So obviously Drew Brees has missed time, but they haven't missed a beat because they're able to force so many turnovers, get so many sacks, and get the balls back. Taysom Hill doesn't have to really do much on offense.
Yeah, and I mean, they have a good running attack right now too. And I mean, I guess fantasy owners won't be happy with Alvin Kamara, but they're running the ball well. I mean, Taysom Hill obviously
they have one of the best offensive lines in football.
He's basically a running back and quarterback. Yeah. And then Latavius Murray's been getting huge production. And then you have Kamara in the passing game, which when Drew Brees comes back, as we know, is incredibly lethal. So, and Michael Thomas is
back. I still
want to
see Michael Thomas step up. He's coming off the injury.
Taysom Hill playing, you know, limits
right,
as
that
well,
definitely
yeah.
does.
Where I think we'll really get to see. Do we know when Brees comes? Is it two more weeks, one more week?
I think when they play the Eagles.
When they play the
Eagles.
So it'll be week 14 then. So first week of fantasy playoffs. So let's go for my fantasy team. Mm-hmm. I mean, other than that, do you guys have anything else you want to talk about with the NFL this week? Or, I mean, I think we kind of had it covered.
No, great week of football. We got Wednesday night football. Get to jump right over to Sunday. You know, pretty quick transition. Sad we didn't get Thursday night football, but I didn't really want to watch Ravens Cowboys either.
Exactly. I mean, coming down the home stretch here, I mean, we got a lot of good games and a lot of stuff coming on, so we're excited to see out the end of the
playoff
year.
Push, best time of the year.
Exactly. So hopefully you guys continue to listen each week because we'll always have our recap, and we'll be back right after this, and we're going to do a little recap of the NBA free agency.
You come around, yeah. You ease my mind. You make everything feel fine. Worry about those comments. I'm way too numb,
two.
Yeah. It's way too dumb.
Oh, he's
yeah.
on.
Troy Brown Jr. finding Beal. Beal puts it up in the air. And the Wizards take the lead. There is still time on the clock.
Brown Jr., the kite by Beal.
And the screen by Mo Wagner. And the pass. And hold on. Coach Brooks, great play.
And we are back now to talk about the NBA offseason and some of the trades that happened. I mean, it's already been an exciting offseason, and the season's right around the corner. I mean,
December
22nd. Yeah, and then preseason, I think, is like, what, December 15th? I mean,
I think so. Yeah.
We're close. We're about 12, 15 days away from getting some NBA basketball back. I mean, it's a 12-month a year league, though. I mean, every
it
day
really
it
is.
Seems
everything
to get boring.
Is exciting. Offseason happens. Too.
I mean, last night you get the Woj bomb. I mean, we had heard little bit reports about this, but all of a sudden you hear the bomb. Westbrook from the Rockets to the Wizards, getting John Wall back and a first round pick going to Houston. I mean, first reactions, who wins, and just what do you feel about this trade?
Nobody wins. I mean, it's literally like you're trading just two clones of a player. I mean, the Wizards side getting Westbrook, pairing him with Beal. They have Thomas Bryant at center, Rui Hachimura. They re-upped Davis Bertans. They have Denny Avdija now after they drafted him. Looks like they're trying to make a push for the eighth seed.
Eighth seed? I mean, I'm thinking they're probably there's no way they're not like sixth seed at least.
It's the Wizards, man.
I know, but I mean, you look at it. I mean, Westbrook, he's done this before.
Yeah,
this is my thing. You got to look at. I think this is what the Wizards are believing. They got Westbrook. I think they think this can easily replicate the Thunder team with Paul George. I mean, he finished third in MVP voting. Beal and Paul George are pretty similar. They didn't have much else around them. I mean, I think the Wizards, they're one move short, I think, from winning a playoff series. I don't think they can win a playoff series with this team. But if they make one more move at the deadline, you know, possibly getting a forward, I mean, there's plenty of guys. Every year at the deadline, it seems to be those guys, you know, the Tobias Harris's, the Aaron Gordon, they're always mentioned in those deals. If they can get a third guy at the deadline, I mean, I think they could win a playoff series.
I just have, like, a couple of questions about the trade because, like, I actually can't remember. Does John Wall have the same contract as Westbrook, or is John Wall's bigger?
I think John Wall has one less year, but I think their value is the same. Let me take a look. But, I mean, while we're thinking through that, I mean, like, how do you think about – what do you guys feel about the Rockets right now? It seems pretty clear that they're out right now.
Right.
I mean,
they actually have a good roster when you look at it because they'll have Wall, they'll have Harden, they have Christian Wood, who's a really underrated
Harden?
Signing.
They got DeMarcus Cousins,
etc.
Do you guys think they keep Harden?
That's the thing.
They value Harden really highly.
I mean,
when they were
it's
in those
what
Nets
it's
discussions.
What it has been said is they're going to keep Harden at least for the start of the year.
Yeah.
I mean,
they're going to need just a ton of assets and draft picks.
I mean, I don't think
Harden.
You trade him.
Yeah,
I mean,
no.
To me, the thing is, every time in the NBA you look at it, when you do a trade of, you know, a dollar for 4 cents or, you know, for 4 quarters back, it never ends up working. I mean, you can't take three guys from the Nets. I don't even care if it'll probably be Dinwiddie and, you know, maybe
Karis
Joe
LeVert.
Harris and Caris LeVert and then a draft pick. I
They've
mean,
already said they only want Kyrie
it.
Or KD. They're not going to sell James Harden for cheap. So
yeah.
I don't see him getting moved anytime soon unless a team throws 10 years worth of first round picks at him. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's rough just because, I mean, you look at, they took that big contract on from Waldo. It has 3 years left.
How much
so
is he making on average per year?
He makes 41 this year, 44 next year, and then he has a $47 million player option.
So what you're doing is you're getting rid of Russell Westbrook's awful contract for John Wall's awful contract plus injury concerns, and you're getting a first-round pick back.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. To me is what it shows. I think the Rockets know they're not going to be winning games. I think, I mean, they fired the GM, fired their head coach. They're going on. They've already traded everyone away. So yeah. It looks like the Rockets are they've dropped out of contention in the West.
It's weird to look at their team now.
I mean, so one thing to look at now, though, is so the Rockets have obviously kind of dropped out of contention in the West. Moving on to one of the other teams that I guess at least had kind of a decent offseason. I mean, we talked about the Covington trade last podcast. I mean, how do you guys think maybe the Blazers shape up in the West? And, like, how do you think the top 4 or 5 is now shaping up? Because I think you got the Lakers up there. I think a lot of people in the media are probably going to throw the Blazers at least in the top 5. In the top 5 in the West. And then you'd probably put the Nuggets and the Clippers and who else? The Jazz and the Mavs?
Yeah,
probably the Mavs first.
I mean, how do you guys think right now that you would rank the Western Conference? I think Lakers would go 1.
I would, obviously.
Lakers 1. Do we put Clippers or Nuggets? 2 or Mavs?
I'm going to go Lakers, Nuggets, Clippers, Mavs, gigantic gap, Portland.
Do you think Portland's that low?
I think every year they do this thing. They have one great half of the season. They have one iffy half of the season. They barely make the playoffs. They win in the first round. Then they lose to a team that's clearly better than them.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see.
I'm not going to deal with that anymore. There's no hype to be had. It's Damian Lillard. It's CJ McCollum. It's Yusuf Nurkic. Then it's just a bunch of garbage on the bench.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. Yeah. One of the other things now to look at is, I guess it's a little trading and free agency. I mean, this was probably the biggest contract free agency. Gordon Hayward, it now comes out that it's going to be a sign and trade. Trading to Charlotte and it was a sign and trade for just 2 second-round picks, so they're just getting him. But the big thing is the Celtics get a trade exception worth $28 million, which is the biggest trade exception in NBA history. So that, you know, adds a little bit. It allows them now to have some flexibility to go get a player now, possibly at the deadline. But how do we feel about this? I mean, to me, it was shocking, honestly, that the Hornets paid Gordon so much money to go to a team where they wouldn't. I mean, the big thing was last year they wouldn't even pay Kemba Walker to come back, and he was their guy. And then they're going to go pay Gordon Hayward, who's had a career, like, you know, incredible injury where he almost lost, like, it seemed like his career. And you're going to pay him this much money to be what? A mediocre.
They must think that they have the young assets that are good enough to then add Gordon Hayward, that you have a playoff piece.
I mean, 4-year, $120 million.
That's all they can be thinking right now, is that if we add Gordon Hayward to this core of young player, they must value their young players so highly that they think adding Gordon Hayward is the final piece to a playoff team.
Yeah, I mean, it's just,
I think it was a huge overpay as well. I'm just saying, we're going into the mind of what, like, Mitch Kupchak.
I mean, I don't fully get it, just because he's 30 years old. I mean, he's not, I don't think he's going to be an all-star again in his career. I mean, you're paying so much money. They just got done with a Nick Batum contract that they've talked about
for years.
We're
dealing with a GM in Charlotte, though, that signed Timofey Mozgov and Lou Alding to $60-plus million contracts.
And Nicholas Batum.
It
was a question mark to me. They made that deal.
It's hard to reason with stupidity, and I don't think we're going to get there.
Yeah, I mean, so that was one of the big trades that had happened so far. I mean, Lakers trading JaVale McGee to the Cavs, not that big of a deal. That was one of them. The Sixers have made a few trades. I guess one of the other ones, Pelicans acquiring Steven Adams. The Pelicans kind of were a center short. I felt like last year they tried to get away with Derek Favors there. Jackson Hayes probably isn't ready to start center.
Right.
Do you think now this Pelicans team can make a playoff push?
I like it.
Ingram's, was Lonzo. I mean, Zion and Steven Adams. I mean, that's a pretty good point.
Steven
Adams, Josh Harden there,
gets or helps out with some of Zion's defensive issues.
Exactly.
I think he really just plugs in there as an instant starter.
And you could probably even play. You could probably play, if you really wanted to, you get away with a little, like, if you go really, you want to go really big in some games to finish off, maybe against the Lakers, who's a really good team in the West.
You go Jackson Hayes, Steven Adams, Zion.
Or you go, you go Hayes, and Favors isn't there anymore, but
no,
you can go
back to Utah.
Yeah, he's back in Utah, but you can go, like you said, Hayes, Adams, Zion, and then Ingram at the 2. I mean, you can play a really
big
lineup.
It's a really big lineup, and I think,
and also a big guard in Lonzo.
Exactly. I mean, are you guys thinking the Pelicans are really going to, do you think they're going to make a push to the playoffs this year? Do you think they're going to make it? They were so close last year. I mean, the NBA basically did a bubble to let them make the playoffs, and they weren't able to do
it.
I mean, well, Lonzo, I mean, Zion basically didn't play, but do you think the Pelicans are a playoff team this year?
There's a possibility that they can make. There's just too many good Western Conference teams. I don't think the young Pelicans team can make it.
I want to see if Brandon Ingram was a flash in the pan last year, and I also want to see what Zion's year 1 to year 2 development's going to be before I can say anything.
Yeah.
I mean, that's definitely fair. I mean, so one of the other questions now, I guess one of the teams that was kind of oddly active in free agency was the Atlanta Hawks. I mean, we've had some interesting things from this team. They were bad last year, and Trae Young scored a lot of points, but, I mean, to me, the biggest thing to look at is, obviously, he scored, I think, almost 30 points a game and didn't even make an All-NBA team. I think that shows how the media really reflects. He's getting a lot of empty stats. But They go out and get Bogdan Bogdanovic, you know, 4 years, $72 million deal. That's an interesting deal. They go out and get Gallinari, 3 years, 61. I mean, they go out and they paid Rondo as well to come there. I mean, do we think the Hawks are... Do they think? I mean, it seems like they think they're going to be a playoff team when they're making, they're paying those players. But you look at the Eastern Conference playoff picture. I mean, there's clearly the top four there with the Celtics, the Bucks. I mean, you got so many good teams up there, and I mean, is there a spot for them to even make the playoffs? I mean, they're paying a lot of money to push as what an eight seed.
This is the third Eastern Conference team we're going to talk about in this segment that clearly value their young talent so highly that they think adding a few veterans is going to make them a playoff team. And I don't mind it for the Hawks. I feel like the Hawks actually have the young talent that when you piece it together with those veterans might make a push. I think Trae Young, John Collins, Onyeka Okongwu, they're all really good young players. And I think adding Clint Capela, Bogdan Bogdanovic, and then who else did they add, you said?
They added Rondo. Danilo.
And Gallinari, yeah. So they have proven scorers.
They also have Cam Reddish, too.
Yeah, I mean,
Cam Reddish, RJ Hunter. Can they play defense? Because this is an all-offensive team. Clint Capela can't cover for four guys that can't play defense.
I mean, a lot of the hope you would think is that Rondo, at least is what I've seen, is they're hoping Rondo can come in and really coach up Trae Young, sharpen up his game a little bit. Which, I mean, obviously Rondo has been Rondo for the past few years. But in his career, he's a great player. He's a great guard for a long time. You know, won a title, was in a lot of finals, a lot of playoff series. I mean, he's a veteran that can come in and really hopefully help Trae Young because he's awesome to watch, but he is a zero on defense.
He's too small.
I don't think I've ever seen that. Hopefully they can turn around because you're right. They need to defend. They're not going to be able to win games. No. They got up 140 points.
That's why they got Clint Capela. They got to cover for guys that can just blow right by Trae Young because of his size.
Exactly. I mean, just some of the other deals from the offseason, I think that were, I mean, not necessarily surprises, but Davis re-signed with the Lakers. I mean, LeBron came out and actually did an extension as well. So it seems like the Lakers are committed now. Both of them had shorter-term contracts, but they got him locked up. I mean, looking at it right now, question for you guys is Davis sign with the Lakers right now. I mean, I guess given that they won the title last year, it would be dumb to say it wasn't worth it, but, you know, they made the trade a year ago for him, and at the time everyone was a little bit confused because the Lakers were going to get him for free in the offseason. This summer he was going to come to LA no matter what.
Yeah.
And the Lakers gave up Ingram, they gave up Ball, and they gave up draft picks as well, and Josh Hart, was that trade worth it, do you think, for... I mean, to get him 1 year early, I guess if you win the ring, it is. But, I mean...
Right. Yeah.
So far, they got the title, and they've built a strong team around LeBron and AD. It's worth it so far,
I guess this is one of the few times, though, at least for the Pelicans, though, that it worked out for them, I think, as well. They were
good
gonna
trade
lose
for both
great,
teams, yeah.
Great
that was
trade.
Like a win-win trade.
They were going to lose Davis this offseason. I mean, everyone knew that, so...
They got a ton of assets out of it. Brandon Ingram's going to be there for
the next five years, at least.
Yeah,
Brandon Ingram signed a five-year, $160 million extension this offseason. Yeah. So
Josh Hart's a good piece.
Lonzo
Ball
up.
Has been a solid point guard for them.
Yeah, I mean, Fred VanVleet obviously also signed a contract staying with the Raptors. That was big for the Raptors to retain him. Do we think the Raptors are able to stay big? They did lose Gasol. I mean, they lost Ibaka. Do we think the Raptors are still going to be in the Eastern Conference mix, or do we think they're going to have a little bit of a drop-off?
They're going to feel the defensive loss of Gasol and Ibaka. Those guys were so solid at defending in the post, blocking shots. Ibaka provided a really good three-point shooter when he was called upon. They're definitely going to feel the losses of both of them, but I think they're still going to be a top six Eastern Conference team just because of the depth of the conference being so rough.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess one of the other things to look at from the offseason, I think the biggest winner, which is kind of interesting, I mean, maybe not necessarily biggest winner, but out of the teams that are contending is the Lakers. They got better, and I think that says a lot given that you are a team that, you know, won the finals last year, and you're able to get better and be more talented. Re-signing Davis was big. Re-signing LeBron was big. But then they were able to go out and get Harrell. They were able to, you know, they lost McGee and Dwight, but that's not a big loss. It's an upgrade with Harrell. I think Mark Gasol, really underrated signing. I think you can play him at the closing of games, you know?
Right, yeah.
And that was something you couldn't really do with Dwight Howard or JaVale McGee. You'd have to go with Davis at center. I mean, I think the Lakers just had a fantastic offseason. They go out and get Dennis Schroeder, too, in a trade. I mean, that's an upgrade from Rondo. I mean, is there a team that is going to challenge this team next year, do we think? Maybe the Bucks if they can get it together. But, I mean, right now it's looking like it's going to be the Lakers, you know, going back-to-back.
Their weakness was the bench. They went out, they stole Montrezl Harrell on one of the best contracts I've seen in a long time for a free agent.
I think it's time we need to give Rob Pelinka some credit, too, because
he's been
forever, it had seemed everyone thought Rob Pelinka was somewhat of a joke at the time.
He's getting fired,
Yeah, because, I mean, and... I don't know if it was necessarily Magic was bad, but Magic ended up getting the blame and he got fired because of it, or he stepped down or whatever happened. But Palinka's gone out there, got Davis. You know, say what you want about giving up, like we said, but they won a ring. You know, and they've gotten better. I think they're poised to easily be the favorite to come back to back. I mean, one of the other signings from this offseason, I guess that was interesting, was Christian Wood. I think he was one of the really underrated signings. He's a really good player. I think he just plays in Detroit, and that's one of the problems. But he going to the Rockets, which I thought was a little interesting. They're spending money on somewhat of a younger player to, like we said, maybe be bad. But I guess that goes back to Harden. Do we think he's going to end up being traded? Is he going to leave after? I mean, I think we all think he's going to be there when the season starts, but is he going to end up forcing a deal to the Nets or maybe Philadelphia?
That's probably one of the harder questions you've asked me through five episodes. I honestly couldn't tell you. It seems like he doesn't want to be there, at least from what I've heard. I would think at least by the deadline we'll have heard rumblings about going somewhere. I don't think Philadelphia. I think if it's going to be somewhere, it's going to be the Nets.
He
wants to probably Philly, but I think...
That's what I was going to say. I mean, he said it's either going to be Philly or Brooklyn, so we know it's probably not going to be anywhere else, and Philly's not going to give up Ben. I mean, the Nets, at least they kept Joe Harris. Big contract, but that was good. Do we think the Nets are going to turn into the team that obviously they built the team last summer, but it was for this year because they knew Durant wasn't going to play all last year.
Yeah.
Do we think the Nets are going to be the contender they hoped they were going to be? Where do we think they rank in the West? Or the East? Do you take them over the Bucks right now?
I need to see Kevin Durant.
I would say probably not.
I want to see Kevin Durant.
Exactly. Do you take them over Boston right now?
I want to see Kevin Durant. I'm not going to rank this team until I see Kevin Durant.
All right, that's fair. I mean, on paper, I would say they're probably third best in the conference.
On paper,
I'd probably take the Celtics and the Bucks over them.
Yeah.
Sixers, it depends, because on paper, the Sixers are really great.
I need to see the team stay healthy.
Exactly.
The Nets need to stay healthy.
I mean, that's obviously one of the interesting
ones. Kyrie missing games. Kevin Durant missed the whole last season. If they stay healthy, yeah, they're a top three team.
Yeah. I mean, how do you guys feel about with the Clippers? I mean, they didn't necessarily have a bad offseason, but they didn't get better. They lost Harrell, but Harrell, they weren't even able to play down the stretch in playoff games. Oh. He was a non-factor. It was horrible because they couldn't play defense. So Harrell, who is a guy in the regular season, looks awesome. And if you don't follow the game necessarily super closely, looks great. You're like, wow, this guy's putting up 18 points a game. Why is he not starting at center? Why did they put the Zubac guy out there? Well, it's because he can't play defense. He's 6'9". He gets bullied by other players. And, I mean, at least they were able to go out and get Ibaka, who you can close games with. I mean, it's not necessarily a downgrade, but how do you guys feel about that swap and necessarily how it helped them defensively?
I like it because they were bad down the stretch. Even Zubac wasn't the greatest at defense, and Ibaka's going to provide a lot of rim protection. He's going to provide some three-point shooting for you. He's going to take some pressure off Kawhi and Paul George down the stretch. Overall, for what they are going to use him for, I think Ibaka was actually kind of an upgrade.
Yeah, for the position they needed. And then they also went out and kept Morris, but 4 years, $64 million. I mean, these teams just love Marcus Morris. Don't they?
Did they trade for him or they sell him? What did he provide for them? Did he have like 10 points a game?
I mean, they played a little bit with him at center. They liked him at center lines, but it was very limited. They didn't get to use it as much as they wanted to, probably because they got knocked out of the playoffs a little bit. I think that was their game plan going into LA. We all knew they kind of overlooked their opponents this year. That was
cool. 100%.
But I think they were hoping in a series against LA, they were going to use him at center. They were going to get with some Harrell minutes at center, and they were really going to go small. And that was going to be how they beat the Lakers, because a lot of teams wanted to go big. But problem is, came up against the Nuggets.
Yeah.
I mean, speaking of the Nuggets, at least, you know, they weren't super active in the offseason, but I mean, they were able to keep Paul Millsap. I don't know, you guys feel anything about that deal? I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily a big deal.
It's not really. He hasn't done much for him. He doesn't really get the minutes he used to, and even when he's on the court, he doesn't do a lot.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of those older players, but at least they were able to keep
him. Good mentor.
Yeah, and then I guess one of the only other big moves was Tristan Thompson going to the Celtics. He is the type of center that the Celtics have needed. I think he is a Daniel Theis and his Cantor, but a lot better. Rebounds the ball. Mason's saying no. You don't like Tristan Thompson.
No, I'd rather take Enes Kanter or Daniel Theis over them. Tristan Thompson is so bad on offense, and he's slow.
But they don't need an offensive center.
He's bad rotating on defense. He can't play. You know, he's not as athletic as either of those other guys. He gets empty rebounds. He's an empty rebound center. He's like Andre Drummond light. I don't like Tristan Thompson. He's been bad since LeBron left Cleveland.
That's fair. That's fair. And then I guess just trying to wrap it up, the only other thing to look at would be the Heat, who were the champions of the Eastern Conference surprisingly last year. I don't think that's crazy to say. No one thought they were going to go win the Eastern Conference, and they were able to go re-sign Dragic, which was big. They needed to bring him back, 1 year plus one team option, so they're keeping themselves open for the big Giannis summer next year, which we'll probably do a whole podcast on that, because that's a big question mark. Who knows? It seems like Dallas is making a big shot at it as well. But so they kept Dragic, but they lost Jay Crowder to Phoenix, I think, is a team now that is starting to really look good.
Yeah, built a nice roster.
They're looking really good with Paul and now Crowder. Crowder's that guy who you can have defend other teams' fours, like legitimately defend other teams' power forwards, and also can shoot the three ball. And that's not a player you can replace. They brought in Mo Harkless, and
Heat
that
fans
is not
are
a
going to miss Jay Crowder almost instantly when the season starts. He is so underrated. He's been underrated since his days in Boston. He went to the Nets, excelled there. He's excelled there. He brings so much good 3-and-D play.
Yeah, I mean, he's a
Mo
fantastic
Harkless
player.
Will not replicate
and
what he does.
Nothing against Mo Harkless, but I think that was a very underrated move of the offseason. A lot of people, you know, it's like, whatever, it's $30 million. Jay Crowder going to the Suns, who cares? That's a big deal. And for the Heat team that was so focused on playing great defense and they have to hit their threes, that's a big hinder, not being able to bring him back. I mean, do you guys think the Heat, what are we looking at, 4 or 5 seed for them? I mean, looking at the teams at the top with the Nets, Celtics, Bucks, Sixers, I mean, there's a lot of teams, Raptors. I mean, there's a lot of good teams still in the East. Do we think they're going to be able to get back to that point?
I'm not going to underrate this team after what we saw from them this year. They have so many, you know, what if, you know, Mo Harkless is their next Jay Crowder. They plug him in. He plays great for them. Eric Spoelstra is a genius head coach. I don't want to underrate Miami until I've seen him play a few games. They seem like a 4 seed to me, though.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they're definitely a middle-of-the-run team. I guess right now, just to wrap it up, who do you guys think, other than the Lakers, because I think the Lakers were probably the consensus winner of the offseason,
yeah,
who made the best move of the offseason? I'll take it out. I think the Suns getting Chris Paul was maybe not the best move, but to me it's the first one that comes to mind when I'm like, great move of the offseason. They take that step. They are now a playoff contender in the West.
I'm going to go with the Suns, Will. My guy Jay Crowder, we're just talking about. He's going to improve that team's defense so much. I think they're going to value him if they make the playoffs. Be great down the stretch in games. My guy Jay Crowder is definitely my signing of the offseason.
Devin, biggest move of the offseason?
I wouldn't say like biggest move, but an underrated would be Robert Covington to the Blazers, because they're so poor defensively that they just need help defensively, and Roko
on the wing, anywhere they can get it.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be exciting to see how these teams shape up. Obviously the season's coming soon. I think we'll probably do a preview podcast, maybe not next week but the following week, and we'll really give you guys a big rundown on what teams we're liking, what players we're liking, give you our MVPs, you know, our predictions for, you know, how the Western Conference and the Eastern Conference playoffs are going to look out. You know, it's going to be a big exciting time, obviously, with football playoffs, the NFL or the NBA starting up as well. It's a great time to be a sports fan.
All right, that is going to do it for episode 5 of the 3-Man Weave. Thank you guys so much for your continued support. If you haven't already, subscribe on our feed so each episode will pop up there. We're excited to continue to cover each sport for you guys and keep you guys in the loop. Other than that, it's been the 3-Man Weave. We'll see you guys next week.
Hands on my knee, dollars begins. Hop off a jig, barely get risk. Cash through the mud and I get a chick. You selling run on my pants and my chest. Chanel address, clean up a mess. I eat a flesh, you know the rest. Pound up a hun, couple Rolex. Shine like the sun, you truly blessed. Who's gonna take? Can they clip up like a Hoobity Jets? Yes, it's on me, got my Gucci shirt wet. Put an M in my bag, don't get used to the rest. I'm with this school where they teach you finesse. 500 shoes for the drip, I invest. I'm the boss, man, I keep cashing the desk. Go to cool fast when they end with an S.